Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And joining us now is Kevin Hewison, who's an editor-in-chief of the Journal of Contemporary Asia and the Weldon E. Thornton Emeritus Distinguished Professor of Asian Studies at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. He joins us from Perth, Australia. Welcome to Background Briefing, Kevin Hewison.
Hi, how are you doing?
Very well, thanks. And Thailand's king is the world's longest reigning monarch, has died after 70 years as head of state. It wasn't a surprise. He's been ill for some time. So let me begin by actually asking you to pronounce his name. It's a bit of a tongue twister.
Bhumibol Adulyadej.
Bhumibol Adulyadej. And
yeah.
Why is Bhumibol Adulyadej so revered and the royal family in general in Thailand, which is a country that has very, very polarized politics between the red shirts and the yellow shirts? And then on top of that, you've got yet another military coup, and now the country's run by the military, which happens frequently in its recent history.
Well, I think the first thing to say is the point that you made. He was on the throne for 70 years when he died. So this means that he's the only king that most Thais have ever known. And in that sense, he's been around for everybody's whole life. The monarchy has promoted itself during that period. Actually, when he came to power or came to the throne, the monarchy was in a very weak position, and he was only 18 years old. His brother had just been killed, still in an unexplained incident within the palace, and he had never expected to come to the throne. But during the period since then, through anti-communism, through tremendous economic development, the king has always been around, and the palace media machine and state's media machine, through much of the period of his early life, there was a military regime in place, promoted the king and the royal family as an institution that provided the country with stability through all of its challenges. And to a very large extent, this is what most Thais know about the king. This is what they're taught in school. This is what they see in the media. Hence, having been around a long time, being on television, in the media, in school books, in cinemas for this whole period, the Thai king has been revered by his people.
So he's been around, obviously, for 70 years as head of state, and he was 88 years old. So let's go back to World War II, when he would have been quite young. But my memory of history was, and you're in Australia, which of course was right in the path of the Japanese Imperial Army and Navy. The Thais sort of invited the Japanese in. What exactly happened there?
Well, of course, the king who just passed away was not in Thailand at the time. He was born in the United States. But grew up mostly in Switzerland. And in Thailand, there was a military regime in place in the 1930s and 40s, which, as Japanese expansionism took place, the Japanese were not really invited in. There was a very short period of fighting, which took place around about the same time as the bombing of Pearl Harbor. But the Thai military leader at the time, who was drawn to the Japanese model, quickly realized that there was no point in fighting the Japanese, and they became allies of the Japanese during World War II.
And then when did the royal family reassert itself? You say that they were quite weak before he took to the throne.
Yes, the military, together with civilians, in 1932 had overthrown the absolute monarchy. Until then, the king was in power without a parliament, etc. They established a parliamentary regime, but the military generally came out on top. The king who was overthrown in 1932 abdicated in the mid-1930s. From memory, I think it was about 1936. And Bhumibol's brother became king. Now, that had been unexpected. His father hadn't been particularly in direct line for coming to the monarchy, and had died relatively young. And the young king came back to Thailand several times to visit, and in 1946 mysteriously was shot and killed in the palace, which then brought Bhumibol to the throne.
And what would explain, would the fact that the military have usurped power so often, would that explain the reverence for the royal family as some sort of alternative to the kind of governance that they've had?
No, the monarchy under the recently passed away king worked in a kind of strategic alliance with the military. The great period of growth for the monarchy, both in economic terms, the current monarchy is said to be the wealthiest monarchy in the world, but also in political terms, where the young king became involved in politics and was able to become involved in politics, came in the late 1950s and early 1960s under a military dictator who was kind of a father figure for the king. Following that, there was another long period of over a decade of military rule in which the king and the military coordinated together. Particularly in the war against the Communist Party of Thailand, which was active at the time. And it's really only since the 1970s, as the king matured and as Thailand's politics changed away from a military regime and then back to it, a kind of a flip-flopping throughout much of the period of his later reign, they've worked in concert, essentially. The king, after all, is, and as most monarchs is, have been, is quite conservative. And often parliamentary politics is seen as turbulent and a military regime as providing stability. And the king has always expressed his desire for order and stability in Thailand.
And I take it that in the most recent battle between the so-called yellow shirts and the red shirts, he decided against Thaksin and his sister, did he not? It's pretty hard to follow, but is that the latest reading on before this military coup took place in 2014?
Yes, that's essentially right. I mean, there was an earlier coup in 2006 which overthrew Thaksin. And one of the things that happened in that coup is that Thaksin was considered, particularly amongst elite circles in Thailand, to be unpopular. And yet he, in terms of elections, was probably the most popular prime minister Thailand has ever had. And yet the coup against him in 2006 was considered by people within the elite as popular, as something that the nation wanted. And the king came out very quickly in support of that coup, meeting the generals involved on the very night of the coup to basically assent to the change of government. And that did quite a lot of damage to the monarchy. Now, of course, he became ill soon after that. But we've seen something of a decline in the monarchy since then, both in terms of its political influence and hence the 2014 coup, but also in terms of its popularity. There's been a much more divided opinion over the monarchy and its role in politics in Thailand since then. But of course, there are strong laws in Thailand, the lèse-majesté law, which prevents people speaking out. And dozens of people have been jailed for being critical of the monarchy in recent years. By 2014, when the coup comes along, the king is essentially not doing very much. He's in hospital. He's very ill. And it's the military now which holds the keys to power in Thailand.
But Thaksin, who was deposed and is in exile, and his sister took over, he's an interesting character. You mentioned that he had a lot of popular support. He was a very wealthy man, a kind of, I guess, Thailand's equivalent of Rupert Murdoch, wasn't he, and controlled a lot of the media. But at the same time, he had a popular support, and that clearly went against the establishment and the royal family and the military. So explain that strain, and where will that strain be? Surely it's festering under the surface.
Yes, it certainly is. The great political conflict in Thailand since the early 2000s has essentially been between Thaksin supporters and something that people refer to as the old elite, which sort of circulates around the monarchy and the military. Thaksin, not really a media tycoon, but a telecoms tycoon. He became wealthy, but he came from a provincial family, which was reasonably well off. He came up through the police. He married a police general's daughter, so that he was kind of in the establishment, but because he was from provincial areas, never quite fully in. He formed a political party in 1998, which contested the 2001 elections and won with a huge majority, mainly by offering what many journalists refer to as populist policies for the electorate, but were really social welfare items such as universal health care, loans for village-based entrepreneurs and so on. And that made him exceptionally popular, particularly in the poorer areas of Thailand, such as the north and the northeast. And that's where most of his support came from. After 4 years in power as prime minister, elected prime minister, there was another election which produced the biggest landslide ever in Thailand's electoral history, putting Thaksin back in power. And yet it was only about a year later that he was overthrown by the military. So this idea that representation, being elected by the people, has been overthrown again by the military twice in 2006 and 2014, underlies the basic political conflict in Thailand. People who support Thaksin want to be able to elect their leaders. The military and the monarchy, to a large extent, are not so confident that elections produce the best results.
For them.
Yes.
Yep. Just in the last minute then, Kevin Hewson, tell us about the Crown Prince who's succeeding the late King.
Well, oddly, it's not exactly clear if he is succeeding the king. The news overnight is that while the Prime Minister, General Prayut Chan-o-cha, announced to the nation that the heir apparent, the Crown Prince Vajiralongkorn, would take over as Rama the Tenth, the next king of Thailand, the prince has asked for time to grieve for his father before he becomes king. Now, this is a very, very unusual situation. No one really expected this, so we have to wait and see how this is all going to play out. That said, the Crown Prince doesn't have the popularity that his father had. He's a much more remote figure. For much of the last decade or so, he's spent time mainly overseas, particularly in Germany, where he maintains a household. And he's not particularly beloved or widely across Thailand. Now, as a new king, he will inherit, if he does become king, he'll inherit some of the respect that goes with the institution of the monarchy. But it remains to be seen whether, as a 64-year-old, he can now sort of build his reputation in the same way that the king did. Most people don't think that he's able to do that.
Well, I thank you very much. I appreciate of this brief history lesson that we've gotten from you, Kevin Hewson.
Thank you.
And again, I've been speaking with Kevin Hewison, who's an editor-in-chief of the Journal of Contemporary Asia, and the Weldon E. Thornton Emeritus Distinguished Professor of Asian Studies at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. He joined us from Perth, Australia. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can scroll down on the right-hand side to subscribe to iTunes podcasts. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.